And once again, on behalf of Pacific Network and all of us at Planet Waves, welcome to tonight's program, a Jerry tribute. Yeah, usually I do some kind of a Grateful Dead tribute around the end of the year, but someone wrote to me and asked me if I could come up with Bob Hunter, the lyricist, with Bob's data. And since I'm a little bit of a mini thing in the Dead community, I reached around and got as far as Robert's wife, but we couldn't get the birth date. Apparently no one has it. I'm surprised. Pretty astrology-friendly crowd there. Who knows? And then again, writers do tend to be private people. And so we'll skip over a discussion of Robert Hunter's astrology for now. Although when you hear the Grateful Dead, and particularly Jerry's work, there's this other presence that's in there. If you know a bit of the story and the story of their friendship and how they were living in parked cars for a while and did some of their most amazing work in that era, and then Bob and Jerry had a friend who had a proper job, which meant that she had to be at work from 9 to 5. She also had a record player and a compilation of American traditional songs, and the Garcia Hunter writing team would break into her apartment. They would jimmy the lock, and apparently there weren't too many Medico locks or Schlage digital locks around back then, and they would play this set of records and basically kind of feed their brains on American traditional music, which personally I think is an awesome idea for music students to steep in this tradition, which has all kinds of roots in the slave tradition and Irish tradition, and it's being fed from all over the place. It's a melting pot, like many things here in the United States. On a troubled weekend in the United States of America, there's been another one of these mass shootings, this time in El Paso, Texas. And I think we're beyond the point of wringing our hands over this and the gnashing and gnawing of teeth about this. And we either need to accept this kind of incident as a normal part of our environment, or study it more carefully. Clearly, it has become environmental, which means that it is a thing that is part of our society, a thing that occurs and that we expect to occur, and that we have to live with on some level, where we have to adapt to this in some way. But really what's going on is that there is a deeper underlying level of fear and paranoia and alienation that is really an issue that I think is more significant and substantial than the gun issue and the shooting issue itself. We, as a society, welcome these weapons in our midst. For whatever reason it is, and either we are wholly in favor of them being present, or can't really seem to do too much about it, or get our political leaders to do too much about it. And the excuse used to be that the National Rifle Association was so powerful and so influential that there was it was extremely dangerous to challenge them. Now the NRA is basically in smoldering ruins as a political force, and the NRA rating is useless. No one cares about it anymore. And like most things in politics, it is merely a an excuse, just hollow words, and And as were the words of Wayne LaPierre, the executive vice president who filled his wardrobe with custom suits from the dues paid by rank and file NRA members, when he said after the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, remember that really freaky press conference where a whole bunch of like first and second graders had been shot up and everything was quiet for a while, and then Wayne LaPierre appears on national television in one of the great political freak shows of all times and makes his "a good guy with a gun is the only answer to a bad guy with a gun." Well, I was laying in bed this afternoon just watching this live coverage of this incident. For a while, the scene was considered active. It's several hours later. I haven't checked back in. It is Saturday when I'm recording this, by the way. And the problem in El Paso was the good guy with the gun phenomenon, because there's a lot of open carry in Texas. There's a lot of licensed conceal carry in Texas. It's one of those states where it's fairly easy to get a permit, unlike in New York, where I live. You have to appear before a Supreme Court judge. You have to have numerous references of people who've known you 10 years. You have to have a reason or at least a rationale. In many states, Texas, Florida, Nevada, it's easy to acquire one of these weapons, and or many of them, including handguns, including what are somewhat meaninglessly called assault weapons. And the problem in Texas, as was being reported today in El Paso, was that there were so many people who were the good guys with the guns that they were confused. These had to be taken away. There was a military person, active duty military person, who also had a concealed carry permit, whose weapon was taken from him by the police, even though he had established a vested right to carry that weapon. And so that whole argument that the good guy with the gun is the solution is ridiculous. It only makes things worse. And what I am really the most impressed by in terms of the pro-gun side of this discussion, and I will tell you, as I've said in the past, there are people that I love dearly who are on this pro-gun side of the conversation. They're licensed. They're responsible firearms owners. My dad is one of them. He's a range instructor and knows what he's doing. And I know numerous other people who take this what would be considered by society a responsible approach. And the though I have not talked to my dad about this lately, talked to other folks in this kind of broad category, you can't get anyone to admit that there's a problem. This is the real the real issue that I have, because the notion of admitting that there's a problem, and I don't mean a problem with them having weapons, I mean a problem with, for example, with mass shootings, a problem with people who should not have these weapons having them, won't admit that there's a problem here. And this is where I fail to trust the entire position, right? So I'm more of a First Amendment person than a Second Amendment person. I'm a person who's lived my life from very young age under the First Amendment. Freedom to print, the freedom to speak, the freedom to have an opinion as assured by the Constitution of the United States. Article 1 right, the right to do what I'm doing right now. And we in this industry must practice a very high degree of self-regulation if we want to be trusted. We must admit that deceptive coverage and that libel and defamation are issues which we must guard against. I have never worked in a newsroom or with a reporting team that was not deeply concerned about getting the story right. And one of the ways we get the story right is we have levels of verification and fact-checking, and there's no law that makes us do that. And it's very difficult to sustain a judgment of libel, by the way. It is one of the most difficult things to prove in the United States because free speech is taken so seriously. And so we must be the ones who ensure that we get the story right. And that is, in my opinion, the responsible use of a right. Now, bad things happen in journalism, and bad things happen with any form of media and print. And the internet, from blogging through social media in various formats, has created a state of anarchy. And the First Amendment is now being brutally abused. All of this, this Russian troll farm stuff that went on during the 2016 election and is likely going on now, this is all abuse of the First Amendment. And we need to take notice of this as we need to take notice of the abuse of the Second Amendment. And what I would like to see built is a consensus that there is a problem that we have to address. We need to at least agree on an underlying value. This is the essence of forming a consensus, is that first you work out an agreement about the underlying values. Then from there, you take the step of what to do about living out these underlying values. I'm Quaker, and we decide things by consensus in Quaker meeting, and I was not aware that this was a tool for consensus until one day my friend C.T. Butler, who is one of the consensus kind of teachers in the United States, C.T. Butler, easily found, broke it down for me one day and explained this, that, you know, consensus is not just people forcing their opinions on one another and like making everyone agree to something they don't understand. That first level is agreeing to values, that we perhaps don't want to see these things happening. And then once people agree to that, meaning that the both seeming sides of this issue, and it is confounding, by the way, because there's a lot of misrepresentation of the seeming sides of this issue through both media and politics. In that, I think most people agree, including NRA members, we've seen these surveys, that something has to be done about this problem, but we need to bring everyone into the understanding that there is a problem. And make some choices about how we state that problem and what we think that problem is. Beyond that, I don't have a solution. What I can tell you is that the weapons owners I know and have known have tended to be insecure people, and that there is a need to assert one's confidence through the possession of the weapon, that there is something that is gained that is supposedly not there when the weapon is not there. And I think that on the most intimate inner level of considering this, we need to ask what that is about. There are numerous other environmental factors that are feeding into this, including the extremely wide use of certain psychotropic drugs, particularly in the SSRI category, all or most of which are shipped with a suicide warning, some kind of a black label. I forget the technical term, but they tend to result in suicidal ideation, and there is discussion of including not only a suicide warning with these weapons, but a murder warning with these weapons. Like, keep weapons out of the way of people who are on these drugs. Now, that is a very wide scale situation in the United States, in an environment where these weapons are prevalent, where the weapons themselves are environmental. You can just stroll into a store and at least in many places purchase a pretty good long gun or handgun in many states. What I think, though, is the most serious problem is the combination of factors that I learned from my study of the work of the McLuhan family, which is that, first of all, the media that we expose ourselves to have a way of eviscerating the concept of the inner being. And the inner being is where we get to know ourselves. It's where we have the feeling that we are someone and that there's something to learn about being that someone. And unlike the previous massive generation, lengthy, by generation I mean like 500-ish years, where literacy was a thing cultivated, electrical media, particularly beginning in the 20th century, have a way of blotting out the entire concept of an inner being, of individuality, of self-knowledge, and of creating a state of mind, a state of being that is basically unhinged from the inner being. And when that happens, one of the most readily accessible ways to attempt to find out who you are, who one is violence. And so one of the things that Marshall said, and this I probably learned this from the Tetrad book, The Laws of Media, written by Eric N. Marshall, is that all violence is an attempt to find out who you are. The person committing the violence, the thing underneath that motive is to find out who we are. Now, there are other ways to do this, obviously. There's the approach that I think is a sane and civilized approach, which is an approach through relationships and sexuality. This is not very popular these days because it requires vulnerability. And one of the things that we get in this culture where now we wonder anytime we might walk into a shopping mall or Walmart or Adams Ferric or Markets where I just was, is this going to be the next scene of one of these incidents? And so even though the incidents happen locally, they're made ubiquitous, for one thing, particularly by the average normal kinds of places that they happen. But my concern is that as this electrical environment continues to proliferate and continues to be in many ways the only concept people have of a social reality, or the default mode in that social reality, or the thing that's kept coming back to it. And as that continues to have its effect of essentially eviscerating the inner life, that there will be increasing tendency toward violence in an attempt to find out the thing that we're here to find out as people, which is who we are and what we're doing here. There's one other piece, again, with deep gratitude to what I've learned from the McLuhans, which is the bit about war being war between the hemispheres of the brain. This comes straight out of Marshall's work, and he is saying that all war between countries or whatever it might be, civil war, whatever, is between conflict between the hemispheres of the brain projected outward. The hemispheres of the brain tend to be assigned gender roles. So this is another environmental situation, is that we tend to take everything and project it into gender and gender roles. And borrowing from that, without fully copping to it, but agreeing that it's part of the scenario that we're in, is that we see in the outer world, in the news and in various signs hung up in various places, the attempt to blur gender. But more often portrayed as a kind of a cultural drama than as a quest that individuals embark upon for ourselves. And so part of the brain hemisphere division that is also contributing to the violence of our society and the tolerance of only violence. Last week I mentioned during Tantra Studio that if, you know, it is considered completely socially acceptable and normal to portray, to report upon, and to seek entertainment through violence and killing and harming people, and that it would be considered absolutely outrageous to portray wholesome, healthy sexuality. This is a very strange state for our world to be in. And I just think we need to be asking better questions here about what this is about and see the many factors leading to this. And to at least create spaces in our own lives where it is possible to have peaceful ways of getting to know ourselves and getting to know one another and allowing the feeling of what I think may be the thing, the quality in the least supply right now, which is the quality of vulnerability. It is not easy to feel vulnerable in a society, or to even want to feel open in a society where we expect attack to be the norm, and where tenderness and sensitivity and communication and the desire to seek understanding are in some way considered alien. And this is the environment that we live in right now. And, you know, with the limited ability to reach numbers of people, really, I'm speaking to you one-on-one, that I have, we need to think about this, I think, and make some choices here and decide which way we want to go. I think there's relatively little that we can do on behalf of or attempting to influence the total environment of society. I think that we have, though, much more influence over our own lives in our own relationships, and the way that we conduct ourselves. How open to others do you allow yourself to be? What emotions do you expect in the course of a day? Where do you tune your vibration to? And what are you passing forward to others? Are you on the good vibes channel, where you're attentive to every social interaction that you have? Do you notice the expression on the face of the person checking out your groceries or making your coffee? Do you have kind words for people when they're needed? This is the deepest level of change that I think we can accomplish. And fortunately, that's still available. You can decide how you conduct yourself, and you may not be able to say, well, I'm going to change the whole world, but you can kind of carry around an atmosphere of awareness and sensitivity, and being the person in your environment who is as supportive of everyone around you. This song is called El Paso.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rose's Cantina. Music would play and Felina would work. Black as the night were the eyes of Felina, wicked and evil while casting a spell. Mala was strong for this Mexican maiden. I was in love, but in vain I could tell. Texas wind, dashing and daring, the drink he was sharing, the wicked Felina, the girl that I love. So in anger I challenged his right for the love of this maiden, won his hand for the gun that he wore. My challenge was answered in less than a heartbeat. The handsome young stranger lay dead on the floor. Just for a moment I stood there in silence, shocked by the valuable deed I had done. Many thoughts raced through my mind as I stood there. I had but one chance, that was to run. Out through the back door of Roses I ran, out where the horses were tied. I picked a good one, it looked like it could run. I'm on his back in the way I did ride, just as fast as I could, from the West Texas town of El Paso, through the badlands of New Mexico. Back in El Paso, my life would be worthless. Everything's gone in life, nothing is left. It's been so long since I've seen the young maiden. My love is stronger than my fear of death. My saddle up and away I did go, riding alone in the dark. Maybe tomorrow a bullet may find me. Tonight nothing's worse than this pain in my heart. And at last here I am on the hill overlooking El Paso. I can see Rose's Cantina below. My love is strong and it pushes me onward, down down off the hill to Galena I go. Off to my right, I see five minute cattle. Off to my left, right, a dozen or more. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch me. Got to make it to Rose's back door. Something is dreadfully wrong, for I feel a leap burning pain in my side. It's getting harder to stay in the saddle. I'm getting weary, unable to ride. But I love the word, Galena. You're strong and I rise where I fall. My love is stronger than my fear of death. Feel the white from the smoke from the rifle. I feel the blood go deep in my chest. From out of nowhere, Galena has found me, kissing my cheek as she kneels by my side. Greater my true love in arms that I'll die for. Little kissed hand, Galena. Goodbye.